Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. From high atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A Kaiser woman is attacked by a stranger in her home. The man accused of shooting Congressman Gabriel Giffords has been found incompetent to stand trial. And a Washington man takes his daughter's cell phone away, and she shoots him with an arrow.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, May 26, 2011. A woman was attacked by a stranger in front of her kids in their Kaiser home on Wednesday. Kaiser police officers said a man knocked on the door of the home on Koala Street North at around 1:30 p.m., when the woman opened the door, she said the man forced his way into the home and began strangling her in front of her children. She was able to fend off the attack, and the suspect fled on foot. Neither the woman nor her children were seriously injured. Police searched for the man for more than an hour with canine crews without any luck. Nearby schools were on alert while the manhunt was underway. Captain Jeff Kuhn said, "Right now in Kaiser, everybody should be on heightened awareness." The man is described as a light-skinned Hispanic or African-American man, 5'9". Medium build with light brown eyes, and he was last seen wearing a dark-colored hoodie and blue jeans. And apparently going door-to-door and being strangly.
That would be a tip-off.
Yes.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, May 26th, 2011. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. And next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson Radio program fills your ear holes with tasty knowledge and entertainment. And is it RickEmersonShow.com? Later this hour, you got your Science of the March, also entertainment news. Here is Don Taylor.
It also fears your fill holes.
That's right.
Yes. The man accused of shooting Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, has been found incompetent. Clinical psychologist Dr. Jeff Gardier says 22-year-old Jared Lee Lofter.
That's what you get from mocking me just now.
I know. I'm all over the place now. Jared Lee Lofner will spend the next 4 months in a mental health facility.
What they're talking about in that 4 months, what they'll do is they'll give him psychotherapy, but more than anything else, he has to be on medications. And if he says he doesn't want to take the medication, they will force medicate him.
Into his anus. That's what that means right there.
Is that what that means?
I'm almost certain that means...
Everything by suppository.
Seriously, it doesn't matter yet.
Oatmeal.
Medication, his lunch, his shoes, everything gets applied anally.
Gardier says the judge's decision... Okay, this makes no sense, but...
Was based on interviewing Lofner?
Well, it says, Gardier says the judge's decision mental evaluations of Lofner. So something is missing from this sentence. It has something to do with the judge's decision regarding Lofner's mental evaluation.
Sounds like the crazy might be catching.
This is a boon for the defense because obviously this man is very crazy. Both the prosecution and the defense have not disagreed on this.
Boon chakalaka.
I had this picture in my mind like in a cartoon where they just stamped his papers very crazy in red ink.
I thought you meant you were picturing it like a Marvel comic sound effect. Boon!
Ooh, yes.
And like then, that. Or a thoom or something. Very crazy. Hella crazy.
Very crazy.
Full on nuts.
Buckload of crazy.
Thank you for joining us. It is Legion of News. It is Thursday and so forth. Here's Don Taylor.
And it is indeed a Thursday. Authorities in Washington state say they've arrested a teenage girl for allegedly shooting her father with an arrow after he took her cell phone away. Mason County Detective William Adams said the man told officers his 15-year-old daughter used a hunting bow to shoot him Wednesday evening after he grounded her and took the phone. Como TV reported that he was airlifted from the rural forested Tahuya area to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle and listed in serious condition. Adams says the girl fled into the woods behind her home with the bow and arrows, but a SWAT team surrounded her and arrested her for investigation of first-degree assault.
Arrow!
Tahuya is 35 miles west of Seattle.
Okay. We're on two different things there. I didn't even hear anything after arrow because I was just waiting for the chance to use that word that way.
See, that was a great part about it, is she fled into the woods with her bow and arrow.
Nugent style.
And a SWAT team surrounded the 15-year-old girl and incapacitated her.
Yeah, the thing is they got guns, so I think it's... I think maybe her plan was ill-advised, from the beginning.
I'm thinking maybe she might not have thought a lot of this out ahead of time.
No, and this is because he took the cell phone away from her?
Right, and grounded her.
Okay.
But again, at the age of 15...
You would have de-weaponized your kids first, I think.
Yeah, I'm remembering when I was 15, and I wanted to shoot my parents with a bow and arrow, all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah, so I just never followed through.
Also, the idea that your kid would still have a bow and arrow in 2011.
Well, it was a hunting bow, and it is a rural area, so maybe they're hill folk.
Well, that would explain... that's more... It just seems to me...
She's out catching dinner.
The bow and arrow seems to be... The bow and arrow is a weird thing. I mean, it's just odd that's the sort of one holdover that... We don't arm people with tomahawks or something. We don't give people spears to go hunting. Why the bow and arrow? Why is that the one thing that we sort of latched onto? You know, here's the thing about the bow and arrow. Especially if you are a guy that has the full-on $4,000 setup that you get a loincloth and co, where everybody goes envisioning themselves as being either Bo or Luke Duke or Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
That's a thing that allows you to tell yourself that you are, a rugged man of the great outdoors while still being able to stay 200 yards away from whatever it is that you're hunting.
Yeah, if you really want to, make
get
it a
machete,
challenge.
You know?
I'm saying, go out with a spear and one of those slingshots. And you have to use rocks that you find
Seriously.
While you're out there.
Just go attack the thing with a buck knife, and then come back and tell me that you're a great outdoorsman. Mm-hmm. Anything that you can use while hiding on top of a barn doesn't really count as being outdoorsman material, it seems to me.
The Supreme Court on Thursday upheld an Arizona law that penalizes businesses for knowingly hiring illegal immigrants. The decision applies only to businesses and does not directly impact a more high-profile Arizona immigration law that requires police to check immigration status of individuals in certain circumstances. Nevertheless, the 5-3 decision, and I'm wondering if this, I think this might be, it says Supreme Court, but I think this might be Arizona Supreme Court?
Yeah, it's not.
State
that,
Supreme
I don't
Court,
believe,
not
yeah.
National Supreme Court. The 5-3 decision rejects arguments that state no role that states have no role in immigration matters, offering a possible preview of how the court may come down if it were to rule on the second, more controversial state immigration law. Arizona is currently appealing a ruling that blocked key components of that law, and that case could reach the Supreme Court. Under the less controversial Arizona law that was upheld today, employers could lose their business licenses if they're found to have hired illegal immigrants.
This was, by the way, the National Supreme Court, which means that recused themselves.
Oh, all right. It also requires Arizona employers to use a federal program called E-Verify to check the immigration status of would-be workers. And yeah, it says here those voting were John Roberts and Antonin Scalia, Anthony Kennedy, Samuel Alito, and Clarence Thomas. Those voting against it were Stephen Breyer, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Sonia Sotomayor. Justice Elena Kagan did not participate because of her prior role as President Obama's Solicitor General. So the Walt Disney Company attempted to trademark the phrase SEAL Team 6 after the SEAL Team killed terrorist leader Osama bin Laden. They sought the trademark rights on May 3rd, 2 days after the operatives raided the compound, saying that they were really hoping that they could develop a TV show for their ABC subsidiary.
That's awesome.
Along the lines of NCIS or JAG. Unfortunately, the actual government had an issue with them trademarking SEAL Team 6, and the Walt Disney Company has withdrawn their application. They stepped back after the Navy moved to protect the naming rights. Spokesman Kevin Brockman said that Disney pulled the plug on their bid in deference to the Navy's application. Navy spokeswoman Amanda Greenberg said the Navy is fully committed to protecting its trademark rights.
It's a strange world that we live in. I mean, it really is. We've just... Somebody's asking... apparently, so the thing with the boat... There's three different points here worth making. One, that she used a bow and arrow because her cell phone was taken away. So that's an odd juxtaposition when you think about it. Secondly, and somebody else claims, I'm assuming he's talking about the bow. The bow and arrow thing happened where?
I will tell you exactly.
I mean, it wasn't like in Nanookville or something. I mean, it was...
Tahuya, Washington, which is...
Okay, so that was in the northwest.
35 miles west of Seattle.
So it didn't take place, like, they weren't living on an ice floe.
No, it does describe it as a rural area, though. So
which is a polite
a
way of saying...
A rural, forested area.
Hillbillies.
Yeah, hill folks.
He says, it's how they fish there. Which sounds like one of those... That sounds like a little bit of pseudo-knowledge that he might have gleaned, like, flipping around between episodes of, of Mayberry RFD and, like... I don't know, and reading a Conan comic.
You know, arrows are expensive, you know, and
also, I don't think you shoot fish with an arrow.
Into the water.
I think if you're shooting fish with an arrow, I think you're doing it wrong. I think that you're expending... I think that is a disproportionate and small return on your
investment
energy.
That's what you use your spear and your rock for.
He says, I never understood, why do lion tamers use a chair? Are lions afraid of chairs? It's because they can't focus on all the legs simultaneously. That is why. It's because it presents four distinct points in space immediately in front of them, and they are distracted by it and cannot... They can eventually, but they often cannot, especially if you move the chair, they cannot figure out which of those things to focus on as the immediate threat, which is why you use a chair and not like a stick.
You're a fount of interesting knowledge.
That's what I do. I mean, I have no other skills of any kind at all in any way, so, you know, I might as well, lion taming. That's really where I've decided to put the bulk of my knowledge. The cream of my intelligence comes from the circus world. Let's just be honest.
And knowing is half the battle.
That's right. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Deputies are seeking tips in locating a man they describe as a prolific drunk driver. Multnomah County's warrant strike team searched for Mark Williams on Wednesday. Detectives said Williams has 7 driving under the influence of intoxicant arrests on his rap sheet, and 4 of those arrests have been in the last 10 years. Detective Todd Shank said, we're very concerned that he's still out there consuming alcohol and operating a motor vehicle. Finding Williams has been difficult, however, because detectives say he gave authorities a fake address the last time he was released from jail.
Excellent.
That's all it takes?
Where do
you
live? I live at 1600... Pennsylvania.
Kiss my butt street. Okay, sir, we've
West
written
Addison.
That down.
Yeah.
The warrant strike team has also served for Reuben Davis. He's wanted a burglary charge. Deputies say investigators found a small amount of blood inside a home that had been broken into, which was linked to Davis through DNA testing. If you have any information, by the way, on the whereabouts of either of these fellows, you're urged to call the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office tip line.
So when they let my, I can just say I live at like 123 at any road, street, your town, USA, and they go, okay, fantastic, good.
Yeah, it's like when
excellent.
You're a kid.
Stamp the thing.
It's like when you're a kid and you figure out that you don't have to tell adults like where you really live.
Right.
You say, my name's Randy. Yeah. I live 3 blocks that way.
On Renderson Street.
Yeah, By the way, they mentioned the thing about finding the blood evidence, and that reminded me, there's going to be a Backfence Portland storytelling thing tonight, I think it is, and Thursday, May 26th, yeah, tonight, and one of the people that's going to be on it is Rod Englert.
Oh, really?
Blood spatter expert. He's
excellent.
Going to actually be on there. And there's going to be some kind of a story. They always have people who get a chance to tell stories from mm-hmm. the audience, and a celebrity judges who has the best story. And the celebrity judge is going to be Sabrina Miller from here on Cascadia.
That's wonderful.
Cascadia FM.
Rod Englert is a great guy. He's the author of a book called Blood Secrets, which is all about, he's one of the guys who pioneer blood spatter analysis and on-site criminal forensics and so forth. So that's great. He's just like this Wilford Brimley kind of guy. Or Burl Ives or something. He just looks like he would just, you know, sort of be there, just kind of like chucking you on the shoulder and taking you to the general store. But then he just has these great stories about him. I think the book actually opens. I think it actually opens with him being, because he started as an undercover an undercover drug enforcement agent for Multnomah, because most of his book takes place in Multnomah County as well. In fact, there's one of the killings that actually he describes this particularly brutal encounter that he has with somebody, because he goes to investigate, I think, a homicide, and then there's a guy there with a gun, and the guy, you know, it's sort of a you'll never take me alive copper kind of a thing. And I don't know, they end up having to, like, I don't know, hide in the shrubs and then ambush the guy and then, you know, beat him down in the street or whatever. Something awesome. But it happens like a block from where I live now. Which is really weird, because he goes, well, it was at the corner of whatever and whatever, and it is literally, it's like 100 yards from my front door.
He has all those great stories about, like, getting the Jefferson High School kids to help him figure out stuff in the...
Bob Crane.
The Bob Crane murder and stuff. Yeah, his book is terrific. And Backfence PDX, which is nice. You can find out about that at Backfence PDX.
There is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A Clark County judge has ruled that although Scott Dole's wife had filed for divorce before he won more than $51,000 on Wheel of Fortune, they were reconciled when the show was filmed, and she's entitled to half.
Does that mean that she just effed him at one point? Is that what reconciled means?
Maybe, sure.
Okay.
She spent the weekend there and said, maybe I might move in. I don't know. Superior Court Judge James Reed ruled Wednesday that when Vancouver resident Dole appeared on the TV show in October 2009, the parties were living together as husband and wife. The judge says the money will be dispersed to Scott Dole and Carrie Dole in 2 weeks when the paperwork is finalized. The Columbia newspaper said the couple separated the month after Wheel was filmed, and Carrie Dole renewed the divorce petition.
Sounds like he was just buying himself an O. Zam.
Yeah. Did you just think that up right there? Oh, that's good.
What do you think I sent away for it in the mail?
I don't know. I don't. Maybe you just had this.
Dear,
like,
Jokes R Us.
This Rolodex in your head of possible Wheel of Fortune jokes.
Yes, because that's what I do with my spare time. I sit around and I look at game shows on television, and I think, if this comes up in a news story vis-a-vis a divorce tale, how exactly will I make comedy out of it?
Don't you do that?
No, the thing is, there are guys who actually do that. There's that Arnie Anderson guy. Arnie Adams.
Is he the guy who writes for Jay Leno?
No, he was I don't know, but he was the other guy in the comedian documentary. Where it's Seinfeld,
and then he's
the up-and-comer or whatever. Yeah. And then they cut to the house where he lives, and he's got this room that's just full of nothing but huge business-sized file cabinets, each of which contains, like, 1,000 pages worth of jokes that he's written. And yet he's still not funny somehow.
Yeah.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Seven international companies are accused of ignoring sanctions against Iran. Deputy Secretary of State James Steinberg says the U.S. will now impose sanctions directly on those companies.
All of these companies have engaged in activities related to the supply of refined petroleum products to Iran, including the direct supply of gasoline and related products.
Steinberg says it's important to stop that because the country's... Because the country's energy profits are used to fund its illegal nuclear program.
Iran repeatedly has resorted to deceptive practices to evade sanctions. This administration, which is the first to impose sanctions on firms under the Iran Sanctions Act, has been working aggressively to prevent Iran from developing its energy sector.
By the way, in case anybody wonders about the notion that business can somehow, over the course of time, just corrode even the most staunchly entrenched moral values, I think this really is a microcosm of the entire thing. The idea that companies continue to do business with Iran, even though, what does the story say? What is the setup for the second quote? Even though the money is going to fund an illegal nuclear weapons program.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it's
that
like...
That ostensibly would be aimed at us.
Yes. That's just the entire thing in a nutshell. I mean, it's not like you're patronizing a business where you think that maybe he has people work overtime sometimes and doesn't pay them all the way for it, or maybe doesn't provide quite enough health benefits, or...
Yeah, he doesn't have a recycling program.
Yeah, the uniforms that he makes people wear at Hot Dog on a Stick are embarrassing. This is what we're actually just doing business with a country that will then use the money to buy nuclear weapons to, you know, kill us. So, not that we're not open to some sort of a deal if there's enough money on the table. I mean, that's, you know,
My main thing with this guy is when he was talking, particularly the second clip, I was imagining what it would be like to be, like, set up on a blind date with him. And like, imagine that you're, like... You're a lady, and you're sitting, you know, at a table, you know, across from him in a restaurant, and he says this.
Iran repeatedly has resorted to deceptive practices to evade sanctions. This administration, which is the first to impose sanctions on firms under the Iran Sanctions Act, has been working aggressively to prevent Iran from developing its energy sector.
Werner Brandeis, you say?
Yeah, he's a firecracker.
You know who this guy is? I forget the character's name. This is the guy who owns the Quick Mealer on the Shield.
Iran repeatedly has resorted to deceptive practices
partnered with Dutch?
To evade sanctions.
Yes.
This administration
all the vending
is
machines.
The first to impose sanctions on firms under the Iran Sanctions Act.
That's exactly who it is.
It is.
Yeah. And you know that that guy gets set up on blind dates all the time. Just some wormy guy sent out there with some poor woman who just, you know, immediately sits down and goes, "Oh God, how badly do I want dinner?"
And then you go home and you call your friend and you go, "You said he'd be a good match for me?
Exactly.
You said he's perfect for me?"
Well, I mean, he's a good provider.
Jan Pete.
Yes?
Okay, how would you pronounce that last name? Give that one a run.
Pinacek.
Pinacek. Okay, sure. Jan Pinacek was chased around a lake by an overprotective male Canadian goose as he tried to collect some grain from a neighbor's garden for his chickens. This happened in Sussex in England. So I'm getting his Jan Pinacek. He jumped onto his quad bike to escape.
The goose?
No, the man, Jan Pinacek.
Not Jan.
No, I'm thinking it's Jan with the last name of Pinacek.
Oh, like Jan Hammer.
Okay. Right. All right. I jumped onto his quad bike, which I'm guessing is a bike with four wheels.
This story sounds very colloquial. It's just sort of this sounds like it was written by a guy who talks a lot like this.
Well, I'll try this again. There was this fellow in Sussex named Jan Pinacek, and apparently he was chased around a lake by an overprotective male Canadian goose as he was trying to collect grain from his neighbor's garden
Wouldn't
to feed
a,
his chickens.
A gander?
Yes.
Okay.
He jumped onto his bike to escape, but the hissing bird flew at him, landed on his head, and knocked him off course. Terrified, Mr. Pinacek crashed into a tree and was left flat on his back in a field in Cowfold near Horsham until a neighbor heard his cries for help and called 999, which is their version of 911.
Is this like a story that, is this just like one of those, like a mock story that's in a journalistic style book just to show you how things are written in a European place we don't understand?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. So he said, "I went past the lake where there were a pair of Canadian geese. The female was sitting on her eggs on an island. The male always flaps his wings and hisses to protect the nest, but on this occasion he followed me all the way around the lake. Out of the blue, he then landed on my head when I got on the bike and I drove straight into a tree." And then he says, and here's the money quote, "I heard a big crack in my leg bone. I was 200 yards from the nearest road, so I screamed and screamed until a lady from a cottage down the road came to help me." The ambulance spokesman said that his tibia bone was protruding through the skin, so we anesthetized him, administered a strong painkiller, and reduced the fracture. Then we splitted his leg and made him more comfortable. He's now recovering at home and is hoping to be back on his feet with 6 months. And the geese have six goslings that hatch from the eggs.
Geese apparently just descend on people with a righteous fury, like way more often than we would anticipate.
Geese are horrible.
Yeah.
They are horrible, mean, terrible, terrible animals.
I don't think it was Tim Riley that this happened to, but I think it was somebody in his neighborhood that was, you know, there was like a pond or a lake or whatever, and there was a bunch of geese there, and they were, and it's the thing where they would, I mean, because you know that they're fluffy and white, and they look, you know, they look harmless. Except then they're not. They're not. And I think that they had some children who were not properly attended. And so the kids were over there. I don't think they were antagonizing the geese, but they were making a loud noise and a ruckus and whatever. And the geese, but the geese just completely passed over the kids and went right for the parents. It was just sort of like a strike at the nerve center. Like taking dandelions out by the root. And they went right for the parents. And it was like, one moment the dad was like, you know, they're having a picnic and the dad's like pouring soup from a thermos. And the other, it's just like face full of goose and blood. So.
Yeah, we had a little man-made lake in my hometown, and it used to be like just sort of a swamp, a wetland, and they decided to turn it into something pretty. And then people kept like dumping their Easter chicks and stuff there, and so it became just overrun with geese and ducks, and people would go to feed the ducks. And basically it got to the point where if you walked into the park and you had anything in your hand
just set upon.
That looked like it might have bread in it, the ducks would start towards you, but the geese would just muscle them out of the way and come running at you. And if you didn't have food, they would peck at your kneecaps and hurt you. They were and honk. They were horrible, horrible animals.
Turn over your wallet instead.
I think finally the city just decided to go in and just kill everything.
Well, that's the only way to do it, Don. It's the only way to be sure. You just have to go in. You have to Agent Orange the entire place.
The city was in an uproar. It's like, what do you mean you killed the geese and the duck? And all I could think of is, have you been to the park?
You don't understand, Your Honor. The geese were mean.
They were leaving the park. The geese and the duck were leaving the park and just walking down the middle of the street in the residential area around and like knocking over people's trash cans.
Snapping their fingers and whistling.
They were like giant Danny Zuko geese. They were horrible.
Sorry, that's the worst. Shouldn't have done that. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. I was, in fact, just singing a show tune as a goose. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will continue this unique approach to American whimsy. We had a clergy watch coming up today, Democracy in the March, and Penis Watch. That is all coming up today at rickemersonshow.com, or you can be entertained with the low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is 32 cents a day. You can find out more at rickemersonshow.com, or your first week is free, and then the rest is, I mean, really, the rest is so inexpensive, it might as well be free. I mean, it is, for all intents and purposes, it is, or as they say in Washington State, all intensive purposes, it is free.
I mean, really, I've had cheap food cart meals that cost more than a month of this show.
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, really, it's you can't afford not to subscribe, is what I'm saying. That's RickEmersonShow.com, and later on this hour, you got your entertainment news. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science.
Hooray! Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. It's 503-252-1609, or you can go to SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Yes, that's what you can do. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical and electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. I was already ahead of myself there. I was trying to work in some sort of a goose joke. But if you go to Facebook.com/SquiresElectric, you can see some examples of, A, their handiwork, and B, the sorts of things that they have to encounter, endure, overcome, be faced with. Really, things that would just send the average person screaming into the night, or at least just be very flummoxing. So you can see any number of situations where they've had to go in and they've had to repair or install or upgrade. They've had to deal with something that's been set on fire, or something that's got water damage, or something that's covered in snakes. And so they can handle all of this and more. So if you've got wires or wiring presenting a problem at your home or your business or your home business, contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, and they can take care of that for you. That is Squires Electric. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Here is Don Taylor.
Federal forecasters are warning a nation that it is still digging out from the devastation of terrible spring weather that another unusually active Atlantic hurricane season is just ahead. While the United States avoided a direct hit of the major hurricane during 2010's very active season, Administrator Jane Lubchenco of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration warned today that you should not count on that in 2011. She told a news conference, "The U.S. was lucky last year. Despite an above-normal season, we did not have significant damage from these storms on U.S. land. The winds that steer where storms go kept them away from our coastline. But we can't count on that again this year." Lead forecaster Jerry Bell and colleagues at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center predicted that we will have 12 to 18 named storms with winds of 39 miles an hour, including 6 to 10 hurricanes with winds upwards of 74 miles per hour, and 3 to 6 major hurricanes of Category 3 to 5 with an increase of 111 miles per hour or higher.
Within what period of time?
This hurricane season.
Okay.
Lubchenco noted that many of the climate conditions that led to a record 19 named storms last year are present again in the 2011 Atlantic hurricane season, which begins June 1st. Still lingering in the Pacific Ocean are cool La Nina effects that bring upper atmosphere wind conditions that are conducive to Atlantic hurricane formation. And above average sea surface temperatures still are observed across the tropical Atlantic. The first official seasonal outlook is similar to early unofficial predictions. But Lubchenco noted that the state of the science regarding hurricane prediction does not allow scientists to foresee the single most critical factor residents want to know, which is the number of scenes in a season and how many of them will actually, hit land.
So really, all of this is, it's just a theory. It's sort of, there's going to be a lot of hurricanes somewhere at some point.
In the ocean. They know for a fact there's going to be, like, oceanic hurricanes, but they have absolutely no way of predicting how many of them will move in to hit land.
Yeah.
So they know that they were actually spot on last year with what they predicted, so they're fairly sure that they know what's going on this year. But again, it's kind of a crapshoot.
It's just like telling me that there's a huge horde of bees attacking people in France.
Kind of, I'm thinking it's more like our weathercasters here in Portland, that we always seem to be upset and confused when something they say is wrong, when in fact, this is Portland. They're always just guessing.
Yeah.
There's no way to actually know.
They're just making it up.
And yet, I think because they say it with such conviction, it's going to be warm tomorrow.
You know,
we feel betrayed somehow when it's not.
Here's the thing. It's because they've got that clicker in their hand. And so we view them as being omnipotent because they can just, with a wave of their finely manicured fingers and the press of the thing, the entire screen changes behind them, and because they use the word Doppler a lot.
That's the one way in which my husband is already turning into an old man, by the way. He actually gets angry at the weather people.
Really?
For being wrong. And I just go, how is it that you don't realize they don't know?
Yeah.
At this point.
No, they are the very definition of, you know, you just sort of say something with a, you know, with a confident smile and a wave of your hand, and everybody just kind of just blindly assumes that you're telling the truth.
And you just, but in reality, you need to look at it and go, that might happen, but it might not.
What is Doppler radar? How's that different from normal radar?
Well, actually, there I don't know precisely how Doppler works. It has to do with them taking pictures from a satellite of everything using radar, and then basically tracking everything. It takes a picture like every something like 15 seconds, and that way they can track the weather patterns of how things are moving. And there's actually a newer system that meteorologists are talking about adopting, which takes a picture, I think, every 5 to 6 seconds. And they're thinking that that's actually would be better and more accurate.
Here's the thing. If you're taking a picture, that's not radar.
Well, I believe
that's taking a picture.
It uses
camera isn't radar. Well, they're two different things.
I know. But I believe radar is somehow used in the process, obviously, because they call it Doppler radar.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the best I can explain it, because believe it or not, I am not a meteorologist.
Well, nobody else really is either, if it makes you feel better.
That Steve Pierce is. Steve Pierce, the local chapter of the National Meteorologist Society, who sends us emails.
Don't get me started on Steve Pierce.
Some scientists peer into ocean depths and explore jungles in search of new species. South African scientist Mike Picker made his discovery, a new species of cockroach, in the middle of a top tourist destination. Cape Town's Table Mountain National Park is home to the world's only jumping cockroach, which this week was named one of the top 10 species discoveries of the year by an international panel of experts. In a telephone interview on Thursday, Picker, who is the co-author of the Field Guide to Insects of South Africa and a zoology professor at the University of Cape Town, said his discovery shows how little is known about the world's insects and other animals. His cockroach is joined on the list by a mushroom that glows in the dark and another that blooms underwater, a spider that weaves giant webs, bacteria found on the remains of the Titanic, a fish found in the Gulf of Mexico waters that affected by the 2010 oil spill, a leech with enormous teeth, a cricket that pollinates a rare orchid, a giant fruit-eating lizard, and a small antelope from West
Africa. Is this a list of things we need to kill?
This is a list.
Because that's what it sounds like.
It does, and yet it is merely a list of things that we just discovered this year.
Okay, but this wasn't all discovered by one guy, though.
No, they were discovered by a whole bunch of people.
Because if he told me it was like all discoveries that this one guy would make, clearly that would mean he was a wizard and needed to be destroyed.
No. It's one of those are like the ten top discoveries of species.
A leech with giant teeth?
A leech with giant, enormous teeth.
If you're a leech, why do you need giant teeth? It seems like you've got it all taken care of with the thing.
I know. Yeah. I don't know. Actually, leeches...
It's like a belt and suspenders sort of thing.
Leeches do have teeth. They will... that's part of how they can eat meat.
Leeches can't eat meat.
There are carnivorous leeches.
There aren't. Take that back.
I'm not.
Don't tell me there are carnivorous leeches.
Oh, there are.
Why do you have to say stuff like that, even if it's true?
Oh, leeches are freaky scary.
All right.
So anyway, Quentin Wheeler, who's International Institute for Species Exploration at Arizona State University, oversees compiling the annual list, said that some 10 million species are still waiting to be described, named, and classified. Wheeler said in a statement, "Most people don't realize just how incomplete our knowledge of Earth's species is. We are surrounded by such an exuberance of species diversity that we too often take it for granted."
Yeah.
So yes, giant leeches with huge teeth and spiders that weave giant webs and,
That's just a way of saying that the world is full of terrifying things and we haven't found, like, one millionth of them. And so that every day until the end of time is going to be a series of discoveries in which we uncover horrible, horrible, horrible creatures that terrify us and keep us awake at
night. Like that pointy-nosed bat from yesterday.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
German researchers are developing a device that turns the palm of your hand into an interface capable of performing these same actions as your smartphone. Instead of swiping and tapping your fingers across your phone, you simply do so across the palm of your hand. Their imaginary phone relies on a depth-sensitive camera, similar to ones used in Microsoft's Kinect for Xbox, that would detect the swiping and tapping motions on your hand. The concept also contains software to analyze the video and a wireless radio to send instructions back to your phone.
I'm unclear, but where would the actual phone be? I'm tapping my hand, but I'm not. I mean, the phone isn't in my bones or something. Where is the actual phone in this scenario?
Well, I think what they're doing right now is the one they're working on right now is they have it. Well, your phone is somewhere, I guess, nearby. I think it communicates with your phone via like some kind of Wi-Fi signal, and then there would be like a little camera that would watch what you're doing. Like right now, they use a kind of an.
What they'll do is they'll help with that. Psychotherapy.
Sorry, that's just me. Sorry about that.
Right now, they have some kind of an awkward head-mounted depth camera. And so that's, you know, it's not really something people are going to want to wear around. But they're working on, as they make it smaller and they refine it, it could fit into, like, the button of your shirt or something like that.
Oh, I see. And then the controller is my hand.
Right. And okay. So it's sort of like your Bluetooth headphones for your thing. You could be across the room or somewhere else and you want to do something with the phone. And you just basically would activate whatever this thing is and then just use your hand and it would communicate with your phone.
That seems like it. That opens you up to so many, many social mistakes. I mean, you don't talk about ass dialing somebody. I mean, how often do you... I mean, really, there's only a couple of things you use your ass for, let's be honest. You use your hand for stuff all day.
Well, it seems like speak for yourself, sir.
It's like every time you pick up a sandwich, you could be inadvertently just calling Switzerland or something.
Well, it's interesting, though. So they presented a study to the User Interface Software and Technology Conference. And who didn't want to be there?
The gift bag there is awesome.
That was in Santa Barbara in October. And this study that someone had done showed that participants could accurately recall the position of 2/3 of their smartphone apps on a blank phone and with similar accuracy on their palm.
Yeah, I could do that, I think, probably.
So apps used more frequently were able to be recalled with up to 80% frequency.
Yeah, I have a whole thing where I spend a lot of time thinking about what screen my apps go on. Because with the, I don't know how it is with the other phone, but on the iPhone, you know, everything is just, it's a series of screens that you scroll left to right. And so, yeah, I take great care to put them in exactly the place, you know, to put the most frequently used ones on the front. And as a result, I think with the first screen or two, I could probably tell you, in the dark, probably where stuff is.
Yeah, have you ever accidentally moved something to a different position?
And you can't find it.
And you're like, it startles you.
No,
for
it's all muscle memory. So,
yeah.
All right, excellent.
That's all the science.
There you go. There's your Science of the March. Brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. You can also find them online at facebook.com/Squires Electric. And don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
By the way, speaking of Squires Electric, did you see the photos that were posted there today?
No, I have not.
Whoever posted, I'm assuming Joe Squires, said that this is the worst wiring box he's ever seen. And it was made worse in that the basement that it was in, it flooded, so it was underwater and it was sparking. And then it says, like, that's a dead mouse in the upper left-hand corner.
Awesome. Fantastic.
20-year-old Reynaldo Munoz rode his own Wave Runner, that's a jet ski, to a juvenile's waterfront home on North Bayshore Avenue in Miami, Florida, with plans of riding off on the family's jet ski, according to the Miami Herald. Instead, the boy who owned the jet ski, who lived in the home, discovered Munoz and shot at him with a shotgun. It's not clear how Munoz planned to ride two Wave Runners at the same time back to the marina where his girlfriend was waiting with a getaway trailer, but the 14-year-old who killed him could be in trouble. The Miami Herald is reporting that the burglar was deaf and could not speak, which casts some doubt on the family's story that they told the police. They said Munoz indicated that he was armed and planned to harm them, but it's not clear how he could have had time to mime out that threat before the 14-year-old son shot him in the head. Police are now investigating whether the killing was justifiable in accordance with the state's Castle Doctrine, which allows killing someone who has illegally entered a home. But this law doesn't apply to your yards or your waterfront in Florida, even though it does apply to tents and attached porches. Unable to use the Florida Castle Doctrine, the defendant will likely argue self-defense. Benjamin Waxman, a Miami criminal defense lawyer, said, the question is whether the intruder or the perpetrator reasonably appeared to be offering deadly force, which means threatening with a gun or a knife or some other weapon. And it sounds like this was probably not the case.
Also, by the way, as soon as you said Wave Runner, I just heard that like Ram Jam Black Betty song going in my head because of Eastbound and Down. And that was just going in my, like underneath the rest of the story as you were reading, that was just playing in the soundtrack of my mind. So
this is very much an Eastbound and Down story.
It really is.
This happening.
They're
claiming the guy was threatening them.
Indicating to them somehow.
He had a knife and was going to harm them.
And Ann Sullivan was there and she was conveying to them the message that he was feeling aggressive.
Yeah.
But that may not actually be.
No, particularly since apparently I don't think they actually know sign language,
no.
I'm sure. So they, even if he had been doing that, they wouldn't know. He would have had to have just been making stabby noises, motions with one hand and pointing at them, I guess, with the other. This knife is for you.
It's like pointing at himself and then the knife.
Yes.
And then a sort of jerking motion and then them.
Right.
And this is really one of those instances where one of those history is written by the victors sort of a thing. Because, like, that guy's dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, and presumably was really unclear on communicating his intentions even while alive. So it is left to them to fill in the blank slate.
Yeah. He also didn't seem to be too bright when he was trying to figure out how he was going to steal a jet ski while he already had a jet ski.
No.
Because you can really only ride one of those at a time.
It's like a modern Aesop's fable.
Yeah.
That dog is a better jet ski.
Oh, I was thinking something like he's starting to take the jet ski across the waterway, but he's got like a fox and a snake and a chicken, and he has to take two at the same time, but he can't take one.
No, I was doing the thing of standing on the bridge looking at his reflection in the water.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress that Israel has to maintain a military presence along the Jordan River. He also voiced another mandate for any peace deal with the Palestinians.
Mideast?
Yes.
It's therefore vital, absolutely vital, that a Palestinian state be fully demilitarized.
Here's the thing, not to reignite the whole debate about this from Monday, because let's be honest, I don't really care all that much, but sometimes I just feel persnickety. Here's the great thing about Israel, though, is that they just have zero interest in compromising. That's the thing that I really, really respect about them. It's that everybody else is like, well, look, we all, you know, want things. Everybody has something they need, you know, at the end of the day. But, you know, at the same time, we're going to have to live side by side. And they're just, you know, and they immediately just go to the, no, you know, it's like, that's their answer. They have the huge stamp that just says, like, F you, that they put on everything. And they have no interest in brooking any kind of a compromise, meeting anybody halfway. They don't, the idea that they want to, you know, I think they have zero interest in giving like 1 inch of figurative or literal ground.
Here's your compromise. We have guns, you have no guns, you stay where we put you.
Yeah, the compromise is that we won't kill you. That sort of seems to be, you know, which I can respect. I mean, that's a sort of, you know, there's a sort of no quarter aspect to that that I find appealing.
He was blunt about what any peace deal with the Palestinians must include.
It's vital, absolutely vital, that Israel maintain a long-term military presence along the Jordan River.
Because there is, here's the thing about interacting with, and this is not just an Israeli thing, but in this situation it is that it's as we sometimes say about American politicians with whom we have ideological disagreements. You say, well, at least you know where you stand. The thing with Israel is, like, no one can sort of claim ignorance that if, like, you cross them, they'll kill you. They'll kill you and they'll kill you again. And then they'll kill you a third time, and then they'll dig you up and they'll jump up and down on you until you're a pile of dust. I mean, really, that is the thing. I mean, so, you know, there is it is an easily understood military and diplomatic strategy that they
have.
He
was not surprising anyone with these comments, is what you're saying.
Yeah, somebody says that Israel's motto is that they have a very aggressively enforced get off my lawn doctrine, and they really do. So you know, there you go.
John Edwards could soon be indicted by federal prosecutors on criminal charges related to his alleged attempt to cover up his extramarital affair.
Fantastic.
During his 2008 presidential run. A number of media outlets are reporting that the Justice Department has given the green light for prosecutors to move forward with their case, and an indictment could come down in the next 2 weeks. Edwards, a former North Carolina senator and the 2004 Democratic vice presidential nominee, is believed to be aware of the developments and is said to be weighing his legal options.
What do you mean, believed to be aware? I'm aware of the developments, and I'm here in Portland. Also, I'm not John Edwards.
Yeah, and I think there was actually a statement this
morning. I think
he's got
the internet in North Carolina now.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a statement this morning where he said something like, yep, I know it's happening, and I may, like, you know, plea out on this, and oops. Yeah, he's considering accepting a potential plea bargain. The potential charges stem from allegations that Edwards spent hundreds of thousands of dollars provided by two wealthy campaign donors to help hide his longtime affair with Riel Hunter, a former campaign videographer. The government contends that the money used to seclude Hunter from public view was a violation of campaign finance laws. After dropping out of the 2008 race for the White House, Edwards eventually admitted to having an affair with Hunter, but continued to deny reports he was the father of her child. Edwards finally acknowledged paternity last year, but has remained adamant that he has not broken any laws.
You know, here's another great thing about John Edwards is that you almost have to admire the fact that he just won't, even as they uncover like an increasingly complex and skullduggerous series of machinations, he just refuses to admit anything that they don't actually have like a videotape of. I mean, because first, you know, he denied knowing her. Then he admitted knowing her, but denied having an affair. Then he admitted having an affair, but denied having a baby. Then there was literally a goddamn picture of him holding the baby. I don't know if people remember that, but the National Enquirer actually had a shot of him in Ryle Hunter's hotel suite holding the baby. And he said, well, I'm a politician. I hold a lot of babies. And just going like, I mean, it was almost admirable. I mean, he just refused. I mean, the thing about John Edwards is, you have to fight for every inch with that guy. He will not give up. He's not going to volunteer anything.
He was a big disappointment to me because I don't, you know, I don't ever really pin my hopes on politicians and don't really expect too much from them. I kind of take the attitude of they're in politics. Of course, they're dirty. But the thing is, he was so personable and he was so good at appearing to be honest and straightforward. He was so just brilliant at seeming. I see him on things like Bill Maher's show, Politically Incorrect, and they would like satellite him in to have a conversation with him, and he just handled off the cuff conversation so brilliantly that he honestly seemed trustworthy.
Well, Bill Maher at one point actually, this is a thing, one of those statements that, and I'm not faulting Bill Maher for this because I mean, who could have seen this story coming, in which I swear to God, like his chief of staff is rooting around in baby feces to try to get a DNA sample, which is true, by the way. But Bill Maher at one point actually said, this would have been back in, it would have been 2004. He said that John Edwards may not be elected. This is when he was running with Kerry. He said John Edwards may not be elected this year. He said, but he will be president someday. I mean, Maher actually said that. He said John Edwards will be president someday. So I mean, you know, and Maher has a pretty finely tuned detector for BS. And so, you know, but he was, you know, but he was a very, very charming, very believable guy. As I think any number of ladies might tell you.
Apparently so, yes.
But here's the thing, like at this point. Like, none of this, nothing he's done at this point just, like, disqualifies him for being a politician or a national leader, it might have been. Like, if you told me tomorrow that he could, like, fix the economy, I don't care. Doesn't matter. F everybody you want.
The spending hundreds of thousands of dollars given to him by his supporters to cover up the thing.
Yeah, but
that's an issue.
But if one presumes that he needed to cover it up to get into office, he really was using that money as they wanted it used.
Well,
giving him money and the purpose of the money is to get him into the White House, that's a fair use of the money, in my opinion.
Well,
this is to get you elected. Well, I can't get elected if they know I got this girl stashed in a Radisson somewhere.
Well,
so clearly.
Yeah. Well, no, that makes perfect sense. It really does.
See, I could be a politician.
Unfortunately, it's illegal.
Well, illegal schmeagle. I mean, really, honestly, so what? So's firebombing Cambodia.
That's true.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. On May 19th, the Des Moines, Iowa County Sheriff's Department raided a Danville, Iowa bar after receiving a complaint from a patron that illegal activity might be going on. The owners, Jan and Scott Beach, have now been ticketed for knowingly allowing criminal activity.
By the way, in case anybody wants to know about the dynamic between Dawn and her husband, Patrick. So Patrick just appeared in the studio right now. Dawn is holding a paycheck in her hand, and then, in case anybody wants to have a microcosm of the entire thing, Dawn held up the paycheck and then held it just out of reach and wouldn't give it to him.
Because I hadn't signed it yet.
No, I understand.
And I was in the middle of reading something.
I'm just saying, that just seems to...
And now I have signed it and I've handed it to him.
Seems to tell the whole story.
Say hello to the people. Okay.
All right.
He doesn't like talking into microphones. I love you. Okay. See you later.
See
you. Bye. Okay, so Des Moines County Sheriff's Department raided a Danville bar after they received a complaint that illegal activity was going on. The owners have now been ticketed for knowingly allowing criminal activity, but they have been breaking the law with illegal gambling. The Bucktail Lounge has been offering mouse racing as entertainment. Scott Beach, the owner of the bar, says it's entertainment for family, friends, and it's something you do on a Sunday afternoon.
It was mouse racing.
It was something to make money for the bar. So it turns out, however, that it's illegal because people were betting on the mouse racing and gambling is illegal. He says, we didn't know we were committing a criminal act. His wife, Jan, said, no, we don't consider it gambling at all. It's just people having fun. The money goes back to them. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. Yeah, that's
betting.
That's betting,
actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Investigators say betting on mice is just one of many violations they found when they raided the place. The sheriff's department released photos showing moldy food and trash covering the basement. I guess that explains where they got the mice from.
Yes.
Police also say the beaches have been charged with providing alcohol to minors and health code violations. When they're not racing, the several dozen mice are kept upstairs in aquariums and are treated as pets, the owners say. It's not like they're getting eight. If you're a loser, you die. Not like that at all,
okay,
said Scott. It's not like they're getting eight.
Right. This is where?
Danville, Iowa.
Okay.
So for now, police have put the end to the rodent races. The owners are headed to court, believing that, you know, they really didn't do anything wrong. Scott, whatever his name is, the owner of the bar, said, there's no meth heads or makers around here. You just got to mess with the mouse racers.
The by the way, somebody is asking, this is for people who listened to the Rick Emerson show yesterday. I think this is not even a question, just an observation. Somebody's wondering if you made Patrick sit up on his hind legs and roll over before he was given the paycheck.
No.
Okay.
No, I did not. He just stood there patiently and waited for me and shaking his head sadly at my arrogance and
tongue hanging out of his mouth. All right. You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget you can get this program later in the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here. Or at legionofnews.com. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Let's. Here's Don Taylor with your entertainment news for May 26th.
Director Sofia Coppola married Phoenix frontman Thomas Mars this summer at her or will marry him this summer at her father's 19th century village in southern Italy. The couple are parents to two children. Coppola divorced director Spike Jones in 2003. Country star Tim McGraw has countersued Curb Records in response to their breach of contract suit, which relates to his album Emotional Traffic. McGraw's suit alleges that Curb is holding his album hostage from country music fans for the purpose of compelling Tim McGraw to serve perpetually under a contract that he has fully and faithfully completed. Curb alleges that McGraw gave Curb old songs in a transparent tactic to attempt to fulfill his contractual recording commitment to prematurely in breach of the record agreement.
Maybe he can do that Prince thing of just writing the word slave on his face and just walking around with that.
Christopher Maloney will not return as Elliot Stabler for the 13th season of Law & Order SVU. Mariska Hargitay is returning next season, but her workload on the program will not be as heavy, and they're giving her character Benson a promotion during the midseason. That was not interesting at all.
No.
No. Edward James Olmos has signed on for a recurring role in the sixth season of Dexter.
Really?
He will play a professor of religious studies. The upcoming season will also feature guest stars Mos Def and Colin Hanks.
The thing about Dexter and that kind of casting, and it's not just Dexter, but I mean specifically in this story, whenever you're doing stunt casting like that, even if it's, you know, not for just a single episode, if it's for a story, or for a whole season, rather, for one story arc, it's automatically uninteresting to me because you know that they are probably not going to, you know, that they're not going to be an ongoing part of the show. That if in other words, if Edward James Olmos were to join the cast of Dexter, that's much more interesting because you don't know what, you don't know how important or unimportant he's going to be to any particular episode or story arc. But when they say something like Jimmy Smits has signed on to be in the third season of Dexter, well, then automatically, I mean, it's a spoiler in and of itself because you know that whatever the eventual story arc is, Smits will be a crucial and integral part of it, or they wouldn't bother to be signing him up, especially by giving him a closed-ended deal of saying he will be on the third season only. So that sort of casting, I think, actually undermines any sort of suspense or interest I have in shows like that.
Well, my problem is that now it just makes me think that, you know, maybe they realize, they can't help but know after people, like, talking on the intranets how disappointed many
right.
of us were with last season of Dexter, which was crap. And they're going, maybe we should go back to those glory days when John Lithgow was on. And so perhaps they're actually writing something interesting and hiring, you know, Edward James Olmos to play it.
I'll wait to let other people watch that and tell me.
Yeah. In the sort of oh my eyes they burn sort of a concept, there's going to be a TV series based on the Hatfields and the McCoys, a mini series for the History Channel. And Kevin Costner is going to play Ants Hatfield.
That's wonderful. I wonder what about this was making your eyes burn and your soul ache, and now I know.
Yeah. Kevin Costner doing an accent, which is something he does so well.
Yes.
Oh, God.
There ought to be a whole channel that is just nothing but Kevin Costner doing accents. Or just, you know, he ought to be like a perpetual movie of the week star. You know, there ought to be like an 8 p.m. movie every Friday, and the only constant is Kevin Costner and the fact that he must always speak with a dialect other than his own.
This week, he's French.
Yeah, how great would that be?
Oh, Saffron Burroughs has left the Bones spinoff, The Finder. Reports entertainmentweekly.com, as the network will reportedly reconceive the role. She also starred in the TV series Long Arm of Criminal Intent and My Own Worst Enemy.
What do you mean they'll reconceive the role?
Well, it's interesting because a few weeks ago they actually had this episode of Bones where the David Boreanaz and Deschanel were hardly in it at all. It was focused on these people, one of whom is like an old buddy of David Boreanaz who has some kind of mystical ability to find stuff. And I'm looking at Patrick and going, so this is the spinoff episode, right, for this new show. This, because it had that it written all over it. And then like a week or so later, it's like, hey, you know, Fox has announced they're going to be doing the show, The Finder, which is a spinoff of Bones. And we were like, yeah. So now, and Saffron Burroughs was a character she was one of the three main characters of this new show. Basically.
Okay, so it's not like an old character that they're rebooting.
No, the show hasn't even started.
Okay,
yet.
So between the introduction of the character and the actual launch of the spinoff, they are going to be reconfiguring the character in some way.
Yeah, and it just says she's left it, which kind of makes you wonder. It's like, did she leave it of her own accord, or
she
did they
exited
just,
the project?
We don't like you.
Yeah.
And then finally, the Australian rock group Silverchair have announced on their Facebook page that they are going their separate ways.
Is that why Silverchair was trending on Twitter yesterday?
Yeah, I guess so.
I wondered about that. That was one of those things that you saw, you know, that you see you go by and you wonder, like, what happened in some corner of the world to trigger that?
The band said, we formed Silverchair nearly 20 years ago when we were just 12. Today we stand by the same rules now as we did back then. If the band stops being fun and it's no longer fulfilling creatively, we need to stop. Therefore, after much soul searching, we want to let you know we're putting Silverchair into indefinite hibernation, and we've decided to each do our own thing for the foreseeable future. We understand some of you may be disappointed by this news, but we really see it as liberating and a positive step for us.
I suppose that's good work if you can get it, as being in a rock band like from the ages of 12 to 32. And then, because those guys, that's a thing where in America they kind of had their moment. But, you know, in the rest of the world, I mean, Silverchair is still a pretty gigantic band. And then at the age of 32 going, well, I'm going to retire as a rich rock star now. Everybody else enjoy your life. Bye now. And then just going and living in a castle, you know.
And probably still being able to, like, walk around most cities in the United States and just not be recognized by anyone.
Yes.
And if they go, what do you do? Well, I'm in this rock band, Silverchair. And people go, who?
But now
what?
I just spend massive amounts of cash.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You know, we're huge in Germany.
On that note, we will do...
There, excellent. All right. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show is next hour at rickemersonshow.com for the low, low cost of just 32 cents today. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, as always. Appreciate you being out there. And don't forget to pick up the show later on via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's here or at legionofnews.com. We'll see you again Friday at noon for another installment of Legion of News. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?